Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Stable Connections, the podcast. Today's episode is with Mia Brown, and she talks to us about her journey with falling in love with eventing, some body dysmorphia she experienced at a young age, landing at Chocolate Horse Farm, and her opinions about safe sport. Hope you enjoy. Stable Connections is sponsored by Hannah Beebe Photography. Hannah offers brand photography to equine businesses. Creating personalized content allows you to connect with your ideal client and consistently share who you are and what you have to offer. Visit www.hannabbphotography.com to learn more. Stable Connections is sponsored by Elk Grove Milling Incorporated, the trusted maker of Stable Mix Complete Feeds. Stable Mix products are available in most Western states through Tractor Supply, and their Classic Barrel program is available at your local California feed stores. Contact Stable Mix representatives at 916-684-2056 for personalized feeding recommendations on how to stretch your hay supply or provide complete nutrition to have a healthier, happier horse. Visit www.elkgrovemilling.com.
So I started riding when I was about 7 or 8, and I was born and raised in Oakland. So I rode at this little barn in the hills where I was leasing this thoroughbred named Chester, and he was like the best thing that had ever happened to me. I absolutely adored that horse. I probably fell off of him like once a week.
Yeah, that you'll learn.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Did either of your parents, were they into horses, or how did horses come in?
Yeah, so my dad grew up in Kentucky, and he owned a horse for a little while. He had an off-track thoroughbred that he honestly kind of had no business owning. Mm-hmm. But he just has always loved horses. He grew up right around the racetrack. Like, his whole family's pretty horsey. They're all super into it. So he was a pretty big component of that, like, push to get into riding. I was super lucky that the barn was, like, 15 minutes from my house. It was a little lesson program, and it was just so amazing. I was there from when I was, like, 7 to 15.
Oh, you were there a long time.
I was there a long time. I started my first up-down lessons there, and then I joined our local pony club. It was the Redwood Hills Pony Club. They're still super active in the East Bay, and they're really, really incredible. They do a lot of really good work. They do a lot of volunteering opportunities, so I was able to meet a ton of different people, and I made so many friends while I was there. They've got a lot of really good school horses, and I was just able to branch out a little bit and really expand my horse management skills. Mm-hmm. Like, it was really incredible for me to be able to learn everything from like lunging to wrapping to administering medications. I felt like I was really able to get that side of horses, and it wasn't all about the riding, which was super important to me at the time because I really wanted to be a trainer and I wanted to teach and I wanted to help people learn.
When was the idea of becoming a trainer put into your head?
Pretty early on. I had to have been like 12 when I taught my first like little up-down lesson, and it was just with a kid on a pony in the round pen, and I would always start just by leading them around and running around. It was a lot of running, lots of leading and running, but it was so fun to be able to see a kid's face light up when they really like get it, or when something, just that light bulb moment happens. It was just really amazing for me to be able to see that, and I just kind of got the bug for teaching from there, because I was like, this is so fun. It was really nice to be able to like kind of be that push into somebody's riding journey.
Do you feel like part of that is because you had a good trainer growing up that you wanted to kind of be that for somebody else too?
I think so. I had a really good trainer. She taught me a whole lot. I've been lucky enough to have a few really good trainers in my life. Like, I've met a lot of really amazing professionals. I think the biggest push for me to want to teach was there was a group of older girls at my first barn. So when I was like 8, they would walk around with me and they would teach me all the things. They taught me how to braid at my first show, how to wrap, how to load. So it was just really nice to have somebody that I felt so comfortable with being able to teach me, and I just wanted to be that for someone else.
Yeah, and with the showing, were you doing hunter jumper? Were you doing eventing? What were you doing?
Yeah, so I started in like the little hunter jumper schooling shows, my first horse was named Stella. She was this big warm blood mare, and she used to do the hunters, but she did a little bit of everything. I love that horse. She jumped anything and everything. Her back was about 3 miles long. She could not flat for the life of her. We were getting like 40 somethings in the beginner novice, but I adored that horse with all my heart. And we started in the hunters just at the local schooling shows, and she always cleaned up because she had a cute little rhythm. She was a nice little mover, and she just kind of plodded along like she was everything that I needed.
And so when did, because I'm believe you do eventing now. So when did that transition happen?
Yeah, so I'd probably had Stella for like 6 months, and I think I'd shown her once or twice. And I did really like the hunters, but I was kind of looking for that adrenaline rush. So my trainer invited me to go cross-country schooling with them. And I'd been like once or twice, but I hadn't really jumped anything.
You just kind of went for the experience.
Yeah, so this was my first time like out of the arena, and like I did a little intro course. I probably did some beginner novice logs, and I was so hooked on it from there.
So it was a good experience, not like super scary or super...
It was so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really nice to have a horse that was just going to go out. She knew her job, and she just loped over everything, and I had the best time. So I ended up taking her to an event at the end of, I think, 2017. And I did my first intro on her at the Fresno County Horse Park. And the train came through in the middle of my cross-country course.
Okay.
If you know Fresno, there's this big, loud freight train that comes through. And I left the start box on my big, giant mare. And I was so determined to just go and get around. I think I was like 12. And I just see the train come through in my peripheral vision. But I was able to just ignore it because she just perked her little ears up at every
intro. She didn't mind it either?
No, she did not care. She
awesome.
Went out there, knew her job, knew what she had to do. So it was just like so fun.
Yeah. And from there, you haven't looked back?
Nope. Okay. I've only been eventing. I have done a few hunter jumper schooling shows here and there, but I just really, really love the eventing community.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're in Sonoma County now from mm-hmm. the Oakland area.
Yeah.
So when did that happen?
Yeah. So I actually only moved up here in December of 2022.
Oh, super recent.
Yeah. So I haven't been up here that long, but I currently ride at Chocolate Horse Farm with Andrea Pfeiffer and Tommy Greengard. And it has really, really changed my riding. I think I'm able to look at it with a very professional mindset. Like, I'm able to go out and I feel like I can just kind of be at peace. Like, it's really nice. They are just two really incredible horse people. I have learned so much there. Like, it's just out of this world.
And how did you find them? What was it like for you to move from one barn to the next?
Yeah, so I had always known of Chocolate Horse. Like, they're a pretty big program. But at the end of 2023, I just kind of needed a big mental reset. So this has been, like, a long time coming. But, of course, it goes all the way back to 2019 when I still had my first horse going in the summer of 2019, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. So he had to go through 12 weeks of intense chemotherapy. And at the same time, Stella did a suspensory. And it was pretty career-ending for her. She was on the older side. And it just didn't seem worth it to really bring her back. She seemed really happy just being retired and hanging out. Mm-hmm. And she didn't owe me anything. So we ended up retiring her. But it was really hard to be 14 and watch your dad go through chemotherapy, lose your first horse. So I got really burnt out from riding. Of course, I'd started high school too. So I was
I think that's a big thing, yeah.
Yeah, I was at a new school. Like, there was just a lot happening. And I really started to kind of pull back from the horses. Like, the barn was the only place where I felt like I could go and everything made sense. But then it kind of turned into a place where I didn't have my horse, I didn't know what was happening every day. So I just kind of lost that spark for riding.
Did you replace it with anything?
I didn't. I was just like putting all of my time and energy into school because that was all I really had at the time that was like making sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I started putting in a ton of effort into school. I'd always been pretty good at school, but I never really took the time to like push myself. So I started doing that and I really bumped up my grades. I was doing some extracurriculars, like I was in a few clubs, and it was not out of like a passion for like, oh, I love learning, this is so fun. It was like, this makes sense right now. So my dad went into remission after 12 weeks of chemo, which was just incredible news. Like, I still remember the day that he texted me at school and said 100% cancer free. Like, that was a really big day. And it was actually the same day that the vet cleared Stella to do more than just hand walking. So I was able to keep her around and we just tack walked and we just kind of did what she wanted to do until we were able to get her into a pasture. She is at Lone Tree Farm right now out east towards Sacramento and she is so happy over there. So that was just, I remember, a good day all around. And at the time we had decided to start looking for another horse. Like, I was kind of looking around here and there. And
was the trainer idea still a big part of you, or you kind of were putting that on the back burner?
I was putting that on the back burner. I was just kind of in a place where I was like, I've got bigger fish to fry. Like, I've got other things to be worrying about.
Yeah. Well, and you don't need to know that right away.
Yeah.
Where as a kid, you're like, oh, I'm going to do this. And you're like, in high school, you're like, well,
maybe I don't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was a little stuck in that mindset and I was like, you know what? Like, I still want to ride. I've been riding like some school horses here and there, but it just really wasn't the same as having my partner. So I was scrolling through Instagram one day and I saw this ad for this gorgeous black gelding and his name was Duke HW. And I remember seeing the ad and I was like, I need that horse. Like, I hadn't had that experience with anything else. I'd seen horse ads and been like, wow, nice horse. But for some reason, there was something about his ad and just about him that I needed. So,
and was he local?
He was. He was in Livermore, California with some trainers that I'd already known of because they came and taught at Pony Club. So it just kind of felt like everything was connecting.
Well, and yeah, I wonder if it's because of the mood and the feeling you were in that moment or if it was specifically that, probably a combination of all of that.
I think so.
Like, you felt ready.
I felt ready to kind of open myself up again, and I felt ready to go back to riding. And it felt like the first time where I allowed myself to be happy again and to, like, be a little optimistic. So we went and we sat on him, and I remember I walked up into the cross ties and I was like, he's the one. I need this horse before I even sat on him. He was so funny. He was genuinely so sweet and he tried so hard, but he had this kind of rough exterior. We called him Snake Face because he would walk up to you with his ears pinned and he'd poke his nose out at you and then he'd just go and stick his nose on your shoulder. And just
he wouldn't actually do, he wouldn't try to bite you or anything.
No, he would just always make these faces and I was so determined to win him over. But I sat on him and like the first three steps of trotting him, I was like, done deal. I need this horse.
So, and did you have a trainer come with you at the time?
So the first time I sat on him, I was by myself. And then the second time, my trainer at the time came out with me and we jumped him around a little bit and we bought him, I think, 3 days later.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was right before Christmas. He was like my Christmas pony.
And this was when you were already up in Sonoma County or you were still...
I was still in the East Bay at the time.
Still in the East Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I bought him 2 months before the COVID shutdown.
Okay.
Yeah. So I ended up spending a lot of time with this horse.
Which is what you want in the beginning, right?
Exactly.
I mean, in general, but also in the beginning to 100%. Get to know each other.
Yeah. So since the barn was owned by East Bay Parks, we couldn't ride just because like COVID protocols and everything, but I was able to go up every day and just hang out with him, like just kind of be with him, which was really good, I think, for both of us. Like, I got super close to him and I just felt completely head over heels for him. So once the protocols had kind of been lifted, I started realizing that I wanted to be a little more competitive. Duke was incredible on the flat and he was as honest as the day is long. I just can't say enough good things about that horse. But I decided to move out to a different barn in Livermore, the one that I'd bought him from. And I started competing more regularly and I don't know what, like, was so magic about this horse, but he went out and won every single event I did on him, except for two, where he got second and third. And I was just so blown away. Like, I didn't need him to win. I didn't need him to be that amazing. He was just my best friend in general. So to also have him be just so naturally talented and so competitive was just, like, insane for me.
It sounds like you're not very competitive. Do you consider yourself competitive?
At the time, I wasn't. I mostly just wanted to go. And there was always part of me that was like, it would be really nice to get a ribbon.
Yes, that's part of showing is like, yeah, it'd be nice to win. But yeah, if you're not like, I need this, or if you don't get like super bummed if you don't get it. Or
yeah. I think since I wasn't incredibly competitive, like by nature, when Duke started doing really well, I started putting a lot of pressure on myself. Between school and I had started working at the time, so I was grooming, riding some other horses, like teaching some lessons here and there, and also trying to be the best that I could be for Duke, it started to really build up. I was 16 at the time, and I was trying to maintain my grades and do all of these things, and I had just gotten to a place where I was so stressed that I couldn't eat. And I remember having a few friends that had struggled with eating disorders in the past, and I was always kind of like, well, that's not me. Like, I'm just stressed and I just forget to eat. But it got to a place where I couldn't look at videos of myself riding because I didn't want to look at my body, because that was the one thing that I could control. I felt like I had so much pressure. And it wasn't even like from the outside of like people needed me to do well. It was people,
internal.
Yeah, it was like I expect to be at this level of like perfection that no one can ever achieve. That's just not something that's possible.
So it was more of a internal, like almost anxiety struggle more than like a external physical?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just something that I could control, and it just really became a habit, which did end up manifesting itself in, if I am skinny, then I am doing something. Like, this is my work paying off, and mm-hmm. I can see it.
Did you recognize that at the time, or did anyone around you recognize it to the depth?
I had a few friends that understood and just kind of knew the struggle, and it was just a little bit of a silent, like, this is just something that I need to kind of deal with and go through by myself. Like, mm-hmm. I just need the time to process and figure it out. But it got to a point where I was starting to get really weak, and I couldn't figure out why, which...
Now you understand.
Yep.
Yeah, if you don't put any energy in, you can't get any energy out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that I needed to be eating like an athlete if I wanted to keep being so competitive. So I had moved up to training at the time with Duke, and I remember being so tired at that show. And I was just like stressed and emotional, and I had to take a step back and just remember why I was doing it, because I had started to lose sight of, I'm doing this because this horse is my best friend and because I want to do right by him, and he does so much for me, I have to show up for him. So that was...
But that's still putting a lot of pressure on yourself instead of seeing it as this is supposed to be fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I couldn't enjoy showing anymore. I was just so stressed all the time, and I couldn't eat. I just felt like people were always watching me. There was so much happening. Like,
it's part of being in high school.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. So I just had really struggled with a lot of insecurity at the time, and I just couldn't get to a place where I could be like, I love horse showing. Horse showing is so fun. I'm mm-hmm. so glad I'm here. I felt like I was always looking at the other girls, and I was like, well, they're moving up faster than I am, or like they're doing this, they're doing that.
Comparison game.
Yeah. And it's so hard to not do that. And I was doing so well, but I could never be truly happy with it.
Yeah. No matter how well you did, there's like that, you could do a little bit better.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you were bringing on, you know, you were doing the school thing, you were doing the mm-hmm. horse thing, you were doing, you know, trying to survive high school.
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was really lucky at the time. I had a really good support system. I had some really close friends that were able to kind of talk me off the ledge and be like, it's okay. Like, it's hard to be a teenager.
Were they also teenagers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little older than me, like 2 years older.
Okay. That's helpful because they've been where you are.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. And I was working students with them, so I spent a lot of time with them. And I just really respected their kind of wisdom. There's something about horse teenagers. Everybody's kind of wise beyond their years. Mm. So I was able to hear from other people that I was doing just fine. And that I needed to kind of take a step back and remember why I was riding, remember why I wanted to do it. And I remember having this sort of epiphany at that show where I was like, I'm here because I want to be, and I don't have to be like beautiful or perfect. I'm here because it's fun. So shortly after I moved up to training, I was able to take Duke to the AACs in Kentucky. And we did the novice, and he ended up winning, which was just out of this world. Like, I remember being in the Rolex Arena, and after our show jump round, just sitting on him, like, still in the arena, just, I couldn't.
Taking it
yeah,
in.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, it was just so incredible to be there with my best friend and to have him really show up for me. And that was
And you him.
Yeah.
And you for him also.
Yeah, I know it's so hard to retrain that mindset. But he and I just had accomplished so much. And it was the first time where I was like, I am having fun. And I feel confident in what I'm doing. So once we got back home, we'd done a few more trainings. But Duke ended up needing some time off. And I took it really hard. I didn't really know what else to do with that energy. I had a lease horse and I was lucky enough to be able to catch ride some horses, but it was still never the same. Like, I feel like Duke was the most positive thing in my life, so it was really hard to not have him. I could still like tack walk him and everything, but he just needed some time off for a sore foot. He had navicular bursitis, so we needed to rehab that, and it was just kind of like when I was 14 all over again. I was like, everything's out of control. I can't hold on to anything. I don't know what's happening. Like, I'm so stressed out.
And do you recognize that in the moment, or you're just in survival mode?
I was kind of in survival mode. I just pulled back, and I always know when I'm getting to that place of like, I need to be by myself, because I just get snappy. Like, it's hard for me to be around other people. It's hard for me to like just show up for other people. But I think at the time, I was able to teach a few of the adult amateur lessons, and I remember seeing them so happy with their horses and seeing them just be so grateful that they were riding and just out there spending time with their horses. And I was able to have another one of those moments where I could take a step back and just kind of reflect. I still have my horse. We're bringing him back into work. I'm surrounded by people that love me. It's okay.
It's almost like a mantra.
Yeah. Yeah, so I felt like I'd really pushed through that, but I had gotten to a place with my mental health where at the end of 2023, I just needed like a full reset. So this was why I moved up here. I just needed the full reset, and I needed to kind of talk myself down, like, it's okay. My parents had always wanted to move up north, and at the time I had been accepted into the University of Kentucky on a scholarship. So I was like, you know what? I'll give myself a few months. We'll go up north. We'll board at Chocolate Horse. I'll take some lessons. I had decided to sell Duke at the time, which was such a hard decision for me, but he was ready to teach someone else. And that was a really hard pill to swallow. But I was able to get to Chocolate Horse, and I walked up to Andrea with Duke at my first lesson. And I was like, this is Duke. I'm so sad, but I need to sell him. And she was like, okay, yeah, let's get to work. And she is just such like a force to be reckoned with. She is firm but fair. I felt really safe and really happy there. And I just couldn't describe it. I felt like I was in such a dark place. But being able to go to the barn and knowing that both my trainers were going to come out the same every day, just be happy to be there, happy to see me, was incredible. It was just what I kind of always needed. I felt like especially in the horse world, it's hard with professionals because there's no HR, there's no standard. So sometimes you can get just some really rocky trainer relationships, and it's really hard to manage those. But I felt like I got to Chocolate Horse and everything made sense. It was professional, everyone was kind to me. I told them my goals. I said, I want to sell Duke, I want to make sure that he is as happy as possible, and I want to buy something else. And within the month, we had sent Duke down with Hope Glenn to the desert, and she got him sold in 4 days, I think, to a 12-year-old who does little 2600s on him, and he loves her. He is so happy. I get to see little pictures and videos, and he just looks so, like, shiny and great, and he looks like he's living his best life, which makes me just so happy. And it was nice to be able to put that much trust for a horse that I still hold very near and dear to my heart and know that he was going to be okay. And likewise, I was going to be okay. So Tommy was down in Florida, and he gave Andrea a call because he knew I was looking. And he was like, sat on this little thoroughbred down here, and he is really incredible. So Andrea showed me the videos of him. He was this little thoroughbred named Stuart.
Stuart.
Okay. And he had, like, been around a few two-star longs. He went to Bromont, and he was just this funny little plain bay thoroughbred. And Tommy was like, if she doesn't buy him, I will. So I didn't even sit on him. I trusted both of their judgment so much that I didn't feel like I needed to. So he shipped over from Florida, and I hand-walked him around. He's like 16-1. He was pretty skinny from the drive over. He's a pretty typical thoroughbred. And we'd had him for, I think, a week and a half. We took him cross-country schooling, and he packed me around an entire prelim course. And I hadn't schooled prelim cross-country in about 2 years. And my confidence with my riding was at kind of an all-time low. I just felt like I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't feel like I was doing right by the horses. I just felt so bad about myself. But I was able to get on Stuart, kind of put all that aside, remember that I do know what I'm doing, and he was really able to bring out the best in me as a cross-country rider, which was huge for me. Cross-country still scares me, which is funny because I choose to event.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the three.
Yeah, that's the biggest one of the three. But I just felt so at home and so confident with the horse and with the barn, and it brought that spark back to the where it was when I was 12. And I was like, I want to be a trainer. I want to ride. I just was filled with so much optimism. I felt really good about myself. I was able to meet so many incredible people, and I had decided to put off going to University of Kentucky for 2 years because I felt like I was finally in a place where I was happy and I was confident, and I didn't want to lose that. So I decided to stay in Area 6, and in the 2023 season, I was able to move up from training all the way to two-star with Stuart. So it's training. I did a modified, which is 3.5. Two preliminaries. I was able to take him to Montana, which was just incredible. So that was 3'7". And then we did our first FEIs. So the two-star is like a preliminary cross-country course, but a little harder. And the show jumping was like a 1.15 meters. And it was just so unreal to be able to feel like, I feel like I'm in the place where I wanted to be. Like, I am at home and I am at peace. So that kind of brings us up to today. I am still working with Stuart. He is the quirkiest and smartest horse I've ever met. He just gives so much when I'm able to figure it out that it makes it all worth it.
What do you feel like you learned the most from those last times of getting kind of hard on yourself and burnt out that you're going to take into this go-around with him?
Honestly, I always just have to tell myself it's not that big a deal. I'm here because I want to have fun. I talk to my friends about this a lot because they are 20 and 21 and also running the upper levels. And it's so hard to not be like, well, I could be doing better. I could be doing this. Like, we are at a place where we wanted to be for a really long time. We are running the upper levels. We have really great horses right now. Just, it's okay. Take the breath. It's fine.
Yeah, live in the moment instead of in the future.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah, I just had to allow myself to be happy and to take in what I was doing. It wasn't always looking to the future, trying to be better. Sometimes I just had to sit and be okay with where I was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And are you out of high school now? You are.
Yeah.
You're not going to college out here?
So I am at the junior college.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what are you studying?
I'm a business major.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have ideas of what you might want to do?
I would still really like to transfer to Kentucky. They have a really incredible equine science program, and I think that I want to continue with that equine science and business degree, just because I feel like I can get best of both worlds, and I do really want to continue with horses. I feel like I've just learned so much from them, and I've been able to really grow and change in a way that I wouldn't have been able to otherwise.
Yeah, and is specifically a trainer part of the maybe route, or you don't? It's maybe.
Yeah, I do really want to be a trainer. I want to be able to bring out the best in horses and the best in people. I think that it is so important to have trainers that you can trust and that you can feel safe with. I want to just be somebody that is a safe space for other people, especially in the horse world. Like I said, there's no HR, we can't manage our professionals. So I want to be somebody that can set the standard, and I want to start moving our horse world into a more professional headspace.
I, from a outsider's perspective, but I have a business in the horse world as well, having kind of that business mind and mm-hmm. the horse care wise mm-hmm. is so beneficial, because a lot of times it's one or the other.
Yep.
There's a lot of people in this world who only have a business mind and are doing a lot of things for money and for to grow themselves, and then, or there's people that have amazing horsemanship, amazing horse skills, but have no idea how to run a business and don't hire out and don't.
Yeah.
So combining those two
exactly.
makes a lot of sense.
Yep, 100%. And that's, I think, just something that I do really want to see change, and I want to see evolve. Whenever we think of like holding professionals accountable, everybody thinks about Safe Sport. And Safe Sport has, oh my God, so many mixed reviews. Like, everybody knows the hour and a half course that you have to take at the beginning of the year, and I hear so many people talking about it in such a like, oh, Safe Sport again. But
like, it's an annoying thing.
It's an annoyance. Yeah. Which, yeah, nobody wants to take the hour and a half to go through, because a lot of the questions are pretty repetitive. And I've heard a lot of people say like, oh yeah, Safe Sport is just don't give minors alcohol. Like, don't do this with minors, don't do that. But Safe Sport is meant to be so much more than that. And it's really disappointing to me that it's not getting the point across. Safe Sport is meant to teach young people how they should be treated in the horse world. It is meant to hold professionals accountable. It's meant to keep everyone safe. But everybody takes it as don't give minors alcohol. It's
so much more. Do you feel like that's the adults that feel that way, or the minors that feel that way, or literally just everybody?
Honestly, I think it's both. I think that the program itself needs to evolve in a way that shows people that it is meant to keep everybody safe.
Mentally and physically.
Yeah, exactly. It's meant to teach trainers how to be that safe space while also remaining professional and keeping that professional boundary. I want to see it become more of like a student-teacher. I feel like some trainer relationships get so personal. And Safe Sport was made so that none of those lines got blurred. It was made to keep kids safe, but I also would love to see them point out more mental health resources. Like I said, eating disorders are so common, especially in like the equitation and the hunter-jumper world, you see it a lot. I want people to be taught the signs of what it looks like if somebody is going through an eating disorder. I want there to be support and places to go and numbers to call for young women and young men in the sport. just so that they can feel comfortable with themselves. And I want there to be lessons about the signs of somebody who's being sexually abused. Like, that's a really big thing that we think about in Safe Sport. And it's, I know everybody calls it a witch hunt, but there's a difference because witches aren't real. There is so much sexual abuse and sexual exploitation in the horse world that is just so disappointing. And Safe Sport currently is not set up with the victims in mind. Safe Sport is set up so that if you make a claim, the victim becomes the highlight of the case. It's all about, well, he said, she said, and that's not okay. If it's going to continue to be processed like that, then victims aren't going to come forward and our sport won't be safe. But we also need that checks and balances system to hold professionals accountable, but also keep our professionals safe. It can't just be a he said, she said. Then there's rumors, there's gossip, no one trusts each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. So what's step number one for that change for you, other than talking about it?
Other than talking about it, I have written into Safe Sport. I've talked to a few other people about it. I've talked to some of the professionals in the area. And honestly, I feel like any chance I get, I'm able to just kind of put that out there. It's so hard. Safe Sport's such a big organization, and USCF is such a big organization, and Safe Sport is the umbrella of so many categories of, like, abuse, even just verbal abuse in riding, or, like, horse abuse, all of these things, and it's so hard to change an entire system. But I think that if we are all able to change our thinking a little bit about Safe Sport, it's not just don't give minors alcohol, it's this is how we protect ourselves, then I think we're able to shed a more positive light onto it and take it more seriously.
I think the intention behind Safe Sport is good and positive. You know, of course, when there's a, it's not just the equestrian world, right? It's all sports. And so recognizing that they're trying and then people like you to step up and be like, hey, what about this idea? Yeah. Did anything happen when you did write into them?
I have not heard back. It was just like one of the little like contact us forms on the website. But I do know that Safe Sport is really good about reaching back out when you do want to file a claim. But I would love to see them grow and change a little bit more into you can write in and be like, hey, this is what I'm thinking as a young person in the industry. Like, how do you feel about this? Like, this is what I want to see change. Because I'm here and I'm living it right now.
Yeah.
Like, firsthand experience.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that's what you want to see evolve or change in this industry.
Yep.
Is there anything within your trajectory that you want to make sure you talk about that you didn't yet?
I don't think so. I think it's just really driving home that we ride horses because we love them, because we want to have fun, and we need to create an environment where everybody feels safe and cared for, which just always seems to fall by the wayside. It gets so competitive and it's so like, I have to be the best, I have to do it, that we start to lose focus of why we started riding in the first place. Like, it's happened to me multiple times. It's happened to a lot of people I know. So just creating a space where we have the resources to be able to take that step back, figure out what's going on, like, mentally, and take care of yourself, and also take care of the horses. Because they do so much for us, we have to be able to show up for them mentally and physically, and we just need to foster that environment of safety and of care for every person, every horse, just to keep it fun.
What do you feel as a student that are your best qualities?
I think that as a student, I am a good listener. I'm able to take constructive criticism. I think that this applies to both school and riding. You're able to take that feedback and just better yourself with it. There is something about being in the horse world that makes you pretty wise beyond your years. And I think that it's really nice to be able to take that into the real world and just show off those skills a little bit. Yeah, the listening, I think that I'm really able to kind of compartmentalize and bring my best self every day, whether it's to class, whether it's to a horse show. And I think that I wouldn't be able to learn that so young if it wasn't for horses.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go into, I guess the last thing is you get to ask me one question. So
yeah.
What's your question for me?
So my question for you was, what was one thing from horses that you bring into real life every day, like one lesson?
I think presence,
mm-hmm.
staying in the present moment. I have a tendency as well to either live in the past or live in the future. And it's a very common thing for us humans, because while you're in school, you're living very future.
Yeah.
When you're out of school or growing up and there's like sad things that happen or kind of like non-controlled moments, you mm-hmm. kind of live in the past of like, oh, well, this time was so much easier or whatever. And so I think for me, nowadays, all I do really is trail ride or just like hang out with my horse. And so I think, just living in the moment. I have a mantra for when things feel kind of chaotic in life, that I am safe, my horse is safe, my family is safe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have water, I have shelter, like, just the basic needs.
Yeah.
Because as humans, we also get so caught up in
yes.
all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
So my mantra of, like, I am safe, my horse is safe.
Yeah.
100%. And just leaving it there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just reminding myself to stay present and, like, right now, things are okay.
Yeah.
Tomorrow might be a shit show. We don't know.
We never know.
Right now, I'm controlling what I can control, because that's part of it with the horse world that I think a lot of people get caught up in, is this control or lack of control.
Yep.
Instead of just being like, right now, this is what I am capable of doing.
100%. I love that.
Awesome. Well, thank you for chatting with me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Hello again, and thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Stable Connections, the podcast. For the first 2 years, I put out episodes every single Monday. Now, they're going to come out kind of sporadically, sometimes every week, sometimes once a month. But if you listen to an episode and enjoy it, please leave a comment, share it with your friends, share it on your story, and if you have the time, please leave a review on Facebook, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Thank you so much. See you next time.